11 of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Treffler. I am so glad to be back with you guys every week again. This week, kids were back in school in my district, and it has been more than a little hectic, but things have been expanding on the podcast front, too. And the response to last week's episode with my dad has been resoundingly positive, and I thank you all for that. If you did like last week's episode, or just like what I'm doing in general, do me a favor and go over to iTunes and write a review. To make things easy, you can go to tinyurl.com/planningperiodreview. I know, it may not seem like it, but that is the best way you can help out the show and keep new episodes coming. Most other podcasting apps aggregate or pull from the iTunes reviews, so it actually has a big impact. So, on to now. This week, I have an interview I did with Mandy Taylor. She's an elementary instructional coach in Texas, an avid blogger, and a member of the Texas Writing Project. We met on a Facebook group for educators, and when I asked if she would be willing to do an interview with me, she said yes. Our conversation ranges a lot, but Mandy is truly brilliant and showers me with knowledge and truth throughout the episode. We discuss things like the problem of noise in education coming from both good and bad outside voices, and how hard that can make it for a teacher to hear their own voice. We also talk about the importance of writing, both long form and blogging, as a reflective practice for teachers, professional development, the need for teachers to take their learning in their own hands, and how hard it can be as a teacher and parent. I was blown away while recording this interview, and I hope you will be too. So, sit back and enjoy episode 11 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Mandy Taylor. All right, welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. My guest today is Mandy Taylor, an elementary instructional coach out of Texas. Mandy, you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about you?
Hi there, Brad. My name is Mandy. Like you said, I have been an elementary teacher for 17 years. I taught kindergarten through third grade. And then I transitioned into an instructional coaching position 2 years ago. So I'm about to start year 20 of this education journey. I am in a pretty fast growing district right outside of Austin, Texas. And we have seen so much change in our district. We had 3 elementary schools when I first started teaching, and now we have 13. And we've grown pretty quick, but it's been really fascinating to be a teacher in the district and then now a coach and also as a parent. So I have a lot invested into education, and I'm just excited to be here.
Cool. Well, thank you. You know, I didn't realize when we did the preamble stuff here that you were in just outside of Austin. I was just there. I was in San Antonio for the ISTE conference a few weeks ago.
Yes. I was hashtag not at ISTE 17, but I was Twitter stalking the entire event. Several people that I know from Twitter were there, and I just would go on and look through the hashtag and find things, and was actually able to come up with, I have written some things down to do a blog post on not at ISTE 17 and just the things that I was able to learn, even though I wasn't actually there. So yeah, it was all I could do to drive down one night and just meet some friends face to face, because I'm like, you can't be this close and me not see you, but life is busy, we're right there.
Yeah, I get it. And you know, I did a whole ISTE episode, but it was with a friend of mine that was with me at the conference. So I kind of interviewed him after every night of the conference and all of our experiences, but I didn't really talk about the not at ISTE thing, and it is really cool. I was using it while I was there. I was sharing stuff on not at ISTE. So, you know, it is really cool how you can kind of experience that conference with it just being so massive, and you can really get the experience without actually being there, thanks to social media and blog posts and things like that.
Well, and the thing is that really Twitter has revolutionized the way that I do PD. I mean, it really, really does. Not just in giving professional development. I do that a lot as a coach, but as far as just what I'm able to take in, you know, people will say, well, where'd you hear about that? And I'm like, oh, it was in a Voxer group. It was in a Twitter chat. It was on a blog post. And they're like, what do you mean? And, I was talking to my mom the other day and I said something about, yeah, this friend of mine from Wisconsin. And she's like, oh, I don't think I've ever met her. And I'm like, well, I mean, I haven't met her. It's from Twitter. And my mom was like, wait, is that safe? You know? It was just like this kind of, you know, and I was like, well, so far so good, but really just the way that I've done a couple of PDs on Twitter and the power of, you know, hashtags and what that means. And because I was very resistant, I thought it was Selena Gomez. I thought it was Justin Bieber or like really foul athletes. And I didn't realize until just really 2 or 3 years ago, the impact that it could have on me professionally. So yeah, it definitely has been a ride since I've met so many great people and just learned so much. But yeah, I mean, I became Flipgrid certified just from the Not at ISTE hashtag, right? Because it's one of the big tech tools. And I was like, well, what's that? And I looked it up and found out and did the things. And I was like, cool. I wouldn't have known if I hadn't have seen that pop up in my Twitter feed.
Yeah, Flipgrid is definitely one of the tools on my to play with list. I have a few that I picked up at ISTE, and Flipgrid was up there. I'd heard about it before, but I've never really used it. So I'll have to spend a little more time with that this year. And the other one you mentioned, Voxer, I've got to get into. I don't know what my hesitation is, but I just have not dove into Voxer yet. I need to.
Well, it for me, I'm verbal. Like, I'm one of those, I talk a lot. I like conversations. And so for me, it's kind of like Twitter is kind of the overview, and then Voxer is a place where I can really connect deeper with certain groups and people. So the thing is it can get overwhelming. I'm actually facilitating a group right now on a student-centered coaching by Diane Sweeney. And so elementary coaches really all kinds of coaches have joined in the group. And, but the bigger the group gets, the more overwhelming it can be. And so there are a couple of tips as far as like turning off your notifications, you know, that you can get really overwhelmed with it. But if, you know, there are a couple of people that I've connected with on Twitter, but I can do it in my car. And so that's nice because I can catch up and listen to people's ideas. And the asynchronous nature of it, where you don't have to be connected at a certain time, you can kind of just check in when it's good for you, has really helped me. So yeah, I don't know that it's for everybody, but I have really enjoyed using Voxer as a PD tool.
Cool. Well, after this, we'll have to connect on Voxer. You'll have to point me in the direction of a couple of groups I should be checking out to get involved there.
Sure.
So, you know, we talked about a little bit before we started about PD, and you've talked about it here too, about PD and finding it on your own. I think we agree that it is essential for us as educators to be connected and to go out and find our own PD experiences. And I think you even said before, it's not the district's job to give us PD.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder though, is that right? Should it be that way?
Well, here's the thing, because even when you said that I said it, I was like, I believe that districts have a responsibility to train teachers on expectations, on district expectations. I think that for a long time, I believed that I just kind of was waiting to be told what to think and what to do and how to believe. I mean, I started teaching when I was 21, so I just needed somebody to boss me, you know? And then the more comfortable I became in my own teacher skin, I think the more I recognized that I was going to have to search something out. If I was having a hard time with conferences, reading conferences, I needed to find a book on conferring. If I felt, you know, that my kids needed this from me, then and at the time, I mean, in 1999, I was searching for books. I wasn't even Googling books. I was going to Barnes and Noble. I was looking for, you know, books that matched what I thought. I would look up authors that I knew. And so just kind of in the last 20 years, the way that I professionally developed my own self has changed. You know, now I can just shoot, you know, I've got enough people on Twitter that I follow that I can shoot a question out and have 14 varied responses within 5 minutes of ideas or things. But I don't believe, I think that districts do have a responsibility to support their teachers in their expectations. However, if I only limited my professional learning to what the district gave me or told me or trained me on, then I would not be the educator that I am today. So I guess that's kind of where I am in that there are things that even if the district doesn't train me in, I'm going to seek out because I think it will impact me or impact my students or impact the teachers that I serve.
I get that. And that is sort of the reality of what we do. I agree with you there, but I guess my question is more, if this were any other field, would that be the expectation? Would you be expected to go out and learn how to sell something or how to make a widget or whatever other field you're in? The company would have to teach you not only what the expectations are, but also how to do the job on some level, right? I mean, why is it that in education it doesn't work that way?
You want to get into politics?
We can get into whatever we want.
Yeah, here's what my sister and I have talked about. My sister is a managing partner at a local accounting firm, and she does not have this same issue. So she is, she goes to trainings and is paid to go to trainings and is paid to seek things out and to, you know, she also has a fully stocked break room and gets paid to, if she goes to a training, she doesn't have to pay for it. She also doesn't have to pay for her hotel. You know, public education is not that. And it's one of those things that I can complain about or I can just accept. I mean, I would love to be able to be funded and to, you know, do all those things. I don't know that I'm willing to fight that fight and say, and I know teachers that have expressed that concern enough to where they're like, no, if the district doesn't send me, I'm not paying for it, or I'm not going to do it, or I'm not, you know, and I understand that too. I do think that teachers have to stand up for, you know, what is right and what they believe in and things like that. On the other hand, there are so many things that are free at this point and ways to connect with people that you don't. I mean, I can choose to pay $350 and go to a conference. That's a tough sell with my husband. He's like, wait, and then but how are you going to, you know, well, are they paying your mileage? And I'm like, they're not paying for the registration. I mean, what do you mean the mileage, you know, like, and so it's one of those things. I was looking the other day for local free education conferences because I want to grow, you know, but on the other hand, these days it's kind of like PD and your PJs. You don't even have to leave your house to be connected to opportunities for developing as a professional educator. And so, you know, whereas I don't think it's right, I do think it's a reality. And I always call it the education serenity prayer. You know, like, I'm going to accept the things I cannot change, the mandates that I cannot change, the initiatives that I cannot change, and then the courage to change the things I can. And so part of my growth, I think, as an educator has been embracing, you know, the tools that do connect me with people and new ideas. And, you know, along the way, you know, it is frustrating, but it's also, that's kind of outside my locus of control.
I think that's a really good way to look at it. And I don't want to sound overly negative at all, but I agree with you. It should be different. I think,
yeah. Absolutely.
I asked the question in the sense of it's something we need to be thinking about. And the other thing I did want to point out from what you said is in terms of funding, I do find that there are grant opportunities and there is money on the table that goes unspent in every school,
yes,
in every district,
yes,
in every state, every single year. And mm-hmm. If you are willing to look for it, it's there. In fact, this year for ISTE, I not only got one trip paid for, I got two trips paid for on grant money because I applied to multiple grants and got accepted on two of them. And so I got to take a coworker with me because I had it already paid for and I had paid for it twice. And I didn't pay for travel. I didn't pay for the registration and I didn't pay for my hotel and I got a per diem. So, you know, it can be done if you put in the effort. Now,
if you're seeking, right.
So you have to look out for it. I will say that part. But sometimes those opportunities aren't available or maybe people don't know where to look for them. So, but you're right. And there are plenty of people that were at ISTE on their own dime. And that's not a cheap trip. I mean, that is not cheap.
I know.
So,
I know.
Cool. Well, I think that's a pretty intense place to start out, but let's just move right along. So I did tell you ahead of time, I have three questions. So we'll start with my first major question for you.
Okay.
And maybe we already touched on it and maybe not yet, but we'll see.
Okay.
My first question is always, what is the biggest problem facing education right now?
I think here's what I would say. I would say the biggest the problem right now is noise. I'm going to say noise. And the reason I say that is because what the pressures that I felt in the classroom, what I thought was the biggest problem in the classroom. And then now being out of the classroom for 2 years, but still feel like I'm very much an educator, because I know like coaching has gotten very popular recently. A lot of districts have a lot of kinds of coaches, and we're used in a lot of different ways. But my main thing is to serve teachers so that they can improve instruction for their students to improve student outcomes. And the thing that's the most probably disheartening to me about working with teachers is when they feel so overwhelmed. Like, I've even read an article about the exhaustion of the American teacher, that it's so loud. The arena is so loud. There is not any other profession that is so doing so much with so little financial support, kind of like we said before. But the thing is that when I am a teacher of a classroom, I have everybody's number one priority in my class, you know? And so I have noise from education in general. I have noise from the kids. I have noise from the parents. I have noise from legislators. There's just so much input. And I think that if I'm really, really, and here's the thing, it's a problem, but I don't know that it's one that can be fixed as far as like a solution base. I just think that sometimes teachers have to really be able to balance their and find that comfort zone of doing the best they can with what they have, doing the best they know how to do at the time. But it's this, I mean, I've probably ordered 14 professional books this summer. And I'm not teaching children, you know, I'm trying to, and I'm like, why do I keep doing this? You know? And it's like, well, I don't have that book on writing. Maybe it's better. You know, we're looking for that silver bullet. We're looking for that one thing. And I don't think it's there, but we have these voices, you know, we have, well, maybe you should do flexible seating, or you should do this, or no, you should do this, or we're not standards. We're teaching students, not standards. Well, but guess what? That's the state law. And no matter what, and even when I'm on Twitter filter, you know, I look through the graphics and they're great and everything about yes. And I'm like, okay, but hold on, you know, there's so many conflicting ideas that I think it's difficult for teachers to listen to their own voice. And so I, as a coach, I think that's been the biggest thing that I've tried to do, is help point teachers to their inner voice. You know, why are you here? What do you believe? What do you know? And then how can we use what you have to do that in your classroom? And it doesn't always mean the latest thing. It doesn't always mean, you know, the most confident, equipped, effective teachers that I work with are ones that can kind of smile knowingly at the new thing and say, okay, and they'll take what works and they'll scrap what doesn't, and they evolve and change, but they can listen to their own voice. And I know that's hard, and it's hard. You know, when I left the classroom, all of a sudden I had lost my identity, because I had been a teacher for so long. And as a coach, I'm trying to find that voice for myself right now. And I think that, I think noise.
Wow.
Turn down the noise.
Wow. Wow. Like, I'm just like sitting here trying to write notes, and I can't even keep up with all of the brilliance you're spewing right now. Like, it's ridiculous.
Oh, so, that's funny.
First of all, I will say I'm also a coach. So, and I have made that transition as well. So I understand you said that you are out of the classroom, but still very much an educator. And that just spoke to me so profoundly. Like, I totally agree with you. You know, and it's funny because people, you know, I was wherever I am, I use Lyft or I talk to people. I just talk to people all the time like you. And they ask me, what do you do for a living? And my first response is always, I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, what grade level?
Yes, absolutely. I had that conversation just the other day with somebody.
And it's like, well, I teach adults. And they're like, well, how does that work? And I'm like, well, you know, I work at a high school, but I'm overall instructional support and I do this or I do that. And they don't get it. Like, 'cause that's not the mentality that people, or at least the layman, as you might say, has of a teacher. But that doesn't mean I'm not a teacher.
So like, here's something funny about that. I wrote a blog post a while back called Whatever You Are, because my niece is, she goes to school where I'm the coach, the instructional coach. And so she was at my house one day and I was saying something, she was drawing a picture for her teacher or something. I said something about like, hey, you know, since I'm not a teacher anymore, I don't get as many love notes from kids. So if you have extra time, you should write one for me, you know, just kind of joking around with her. Couple days later, she came up to me. I was in the crosswalk at school directing traffic because other duties is assigned. And she gave me, I have this whole thing in a blog post, but she gave me this little note. And it said, Dear Aunt Mandy, you told me you don't get very many notes since you became a whatever you are. And so I wanted to make you this. And I completely died, like in hysterics. I was showing my friends and I was like, this is my life, whatever you are. Like, because adults will, you know, I had a parent stop me once and she was like, what exactly do you do here? So I'm trying to explain like coaching in a nutshell, or the kids think I'm the counselor because her and I share an office. I had a mom talk to me one day for 20 minutes, I think, until I think she realized I wasn't the counselor. Like, she didn't know. I had a kid ask if I was the PE coach. No. Because they don't know. It's only been at our campus for 2 years. So it's this big learning curve, but you're exactly right. I found a t-shirt that says I am an educator, because all of my teacher t-shirts didn't seem to, you know, I have teacher style, you know, so I've bought a shirt that said I am an educator, because there weren't very many instructional coaching shirts and they were, you know, I mean, I was like, I don't know what I am. So I continue to struggle through this identity crisis, but I am still in education. I am an educator. So yeah, that's true, but it's confusing.
I love that line, but I'll go back to your actual answer, which is that noise. And I loved how you brought this back around to this idea of like noise is in the way. But your job as a coach is to point teachers to their inner voice. Like, you're that noise filter. And that's such a cool way to look at what we do. Like, I thought that was just such an awesome way to put that. That was awesome. So,
but
you're right. Like, I agree with you in the sense of there's so much out there. And I've said before on the show that people ask me what would be my measurement of success for this podcast. And I said, I don't know, 5 people listening to it. I don't really have a measurement of success. But when I thought about it a little bit more, I said, well, maybe my measurement of success would be one teacher just going rogue, just going, you know what? I don't care what anyone else says. I'm going to do what's good for my kids. And I think that's kind of the point you're making, is that there are a lot of people telling us what to do and telling us how it might be better. And I'm going to blame Twitter and Voxer and all those other sources too, because we do go out of our way for PD constantly. And this connected educator movement does actually add a lot more noise. And it may be good noise. We can have that discussion separately, but it is more noise on a teacher's plate. And so I think it'd be great if you just ignored all the noise and just said, I'm a teacher. I know what's good for my kids because I love my kids, and I'm going to do that thing regardless of what anyone else tells me to do.
Yeah, well, it's funny because as we're talking, I'm like, oh, I did. I wrote a post about that. I guest blogged for Eric Sandberg's instructional coaching blog, and it was basically comparing it to baseball because my son plays baseball, and we were at a tournament, and I just was kind of laughing. I'm a terrible baseball mom. but I was laughing at the things that everybody was saying, that the, you know, the parents are yelling and the coaches are yelling and the kids are yelling at each other and they're, you know, all these things. And they're conflicting. You know, one coach is saying this and it's directly in conflict with what the dad is yelling from here and the, you know, baseball ready and be a wall and what. And I'm just like, I was laughing because I asked my son, he's a pitcher, and I was asking and he goes, Mom, it's just so hard to know who to listen to. And I was like, that's it. And in the blog post, I said, like, the most effective baseball players are the ones that know the game so well that they're able to listen to their own voice, that they clap at the pitcher. They're getting ready to steal. They may take off and lead off second a little bit more, but maybe the coach tells them to stay and they go anyway. And maybe, you know, but they have this such a sense of the game that they're able to filter the noise. And my son struggled with that, knowing who to listen to. And I find that it's the same with teaching, that when you know your own voice, it's easier to make that comparison, you know, to make those stands. But when you don't, it's when it gets really difficult.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And so tell me, though, because part of this sort of knowing your own voice is your voice has to be right, because there are wrong ways to do our job. So to do education, to do teaching. So is that something, because say we get them to filter all the noise out and their voice is saying, well, I don't really care what the kids do, I'm just going to do it my way. Is that something we can teach? Can we teach the inner voice the right way to do things without it being taken as noise?
You know, I don't know. I think that I certainly have ideas about things that are right and things that are wrong or things that aren't good practice. You know, I read something the other day that said, just because it's best practice doesn't mean it's the only practice. Or I can't remember what the exact quote was right now, but because things change. And that's what's so weird, is that just because it's best practice at some point, or just because it worked with that kid, or just because it worked for you that year, doesn't necessarily mean that it's always going to work. I think the shifting nature and the fluidity that is in education means that we have to constantly adjust. It's monitor and adjust, you know, and that's why effective teachers, I think we check for understanding. If we know something's not going well, you can shift it midway. I know that, you know, the best lesson that I've ever done may not work the next year because the kids are different, the group is different, Debbie Miller wrote a book called Teaching with Intention, and she was so funny because she was basically like, you know, just what do you believe in? And like, when people walk in your space, do they know what you value? Do they know what you believe in? And the truth is that if I have 22 kids in my class, I have 22 different little personalities in there. And so just because something works for me doesn't mean it works every time, you know. And I have, with my own kids, there are teachers that they have fallen in love with and teachers that they haven't connected with as much, but another kid will bond with that teacher in a way that's so different, you know? So I don't know that there's one right way. I mean, well, I know that there's not. There's not one right way. I think we have to just be so invested in monitoring and adjusting, you know, and really just kind of seeing. I saw a post the other day where a girl was like, flexible seating, why flexible seating didn't work for me. And I thought, you know, that was really brave of her to write that, because right now flexible seating is considered best practice. And, or it, on Twitter, depending on where you are. I've heard before that, you know, Twitter is kind of like a year ahead of what the general, you know, teaching force is. But she was basically saying, these are the reasons it didn't work for me. And now she's saying, is it wrong? No. Is it bad? No, but it didn't work for me, and here's why. So to answer your question, I don't think there's a right way. I think that we can certainly point teachers to research and theory in the writing project. I worked with the Central Texas Writing Project, and that's one of our goals, is to help teachers move from that point where something works, but they don't really know why, and helping them attach that to like the theory and the strategies that are researched to help them understand, so that it helps make them more competent in the classroom. So that if somebody questions what they're doing, they're able to say why they've made that decision. You know, that education is so intentional, and we do things that for such specific reasons, but sometimes we don't even really know. We know it works, but we're not sure why. And so looking at it kind of as an action research and being able to build on those moments, I think is really helpful.
Awesome. I'm so much of that. I just agree with everything you're saying. You're awesome. All right.
Who knew that we were going to connect in this way?
I know, right? Isn't this awesome? This is why I love my podcast. I get to meet new people. I get to have great discussions, and it's just awesome. So, all right, I'm going to move to my second question here, because I don't do segues. And my second question is...
I'm so nervous.
No, you're fine. That's the hard one. The hard one's done now. They're easy from here.
Okay. So, I feel like I've gone to church on the introduction and question one. So can I like do some comedy here, or maybe sing a song? I don't know.
This should be a fun one. What is something that you're doing or did when you were in the classroom? You can take it either way. But something that you're doing that you think all other teachers should do or should try.
Oh, that is a good one. I think that I'm trying to think if I want to do it like when I was in the classroom or when I was. Okay, so that could go 100,000 different ways, but even when I was in the classroom and as a coach now, one of the things that I have done that I think everybody should try is blogging, because I think it goes back to the work that I do with the writing project and having kind of that background of, so Mem Fox is one of my favorite authors, and she's a children's author that has written, you know, Koala Lou and Wilfred Gordon McDonald Partridge, all these fantastic children's books. But she wrote a book called Radical Reflections that was one of my required readings as an undergrad. And it really, really, really changed my thought process about education. And so she has this quote in one of her books about how teachers of writing who are engaged in a writing battle themselves, right? So teachers who are writers are more able to empathize with the writers in their classroom because they've been on the battlefield. And I'm not directly quoting this. I'm paraphrasing. But she said, because the typical teacher sits at the hotel bar and corresponds, is a correspondent at the hotel bar, you know, talking about the action, but declining to get in there themselves and write. And when I read that, I was like, oh my gosh, because kids don't realize the internal struggles of a writer. Because, and I taught, like I said, I taught little ones. So when I taught first grade, the kids were like, how do you draw like that? How do you write like that? How does your handwriting look like that? How you make letters so good, you know, and everything is about the perfection. And so I had to be very intentional to one, model and think aloud, the like to let them inside my brain, like, why should a capital letter go here? You know, because you have to show them what your brain is going through. And because if not, they think that it should just be easy, that they shouldn't have to think it through. And so when I read that, I was like, that is it. And so I went through the writing project myself I had just finished my first year teaching. So I knew zero. I thought I knew a lot. but going through the writing project, we had to write. We had to write experimental pieces. We had to write a memoir. We had to write like a research article. We had to do all these things. And it was so hard. Like, I was sitting there once at journal time thinking, this is the longest 20 minutes of my entire life. And so she's like, well, what do you think it feels like when a 7-year-old is given this writing time, you know? And so it really helped me understand from a writer's perspective, because as a teacher, I wanted to emulate the real world for my kids. I don't want to, you know, I mean, as much as possible, I want them to be involved in things that they're going to do in the real world. So
yeah,
so blogging for me has been a way to reflect on my practice, to celebrate the things that happen, to take a funny look at, you know, because sometimes if you're not laughing, you're crying in education. I mean, if you're not looking for a, you know, the funniness and the humanity in it, then you're just going to sob all the time. So I think blogging there, that's the simple answer.
Awesome. Da-dum-dum. I mean, as a podcaster, obviously I am pro sharing your stuff. And I think podcasting shares a lot of those things. And I blog as well, although I'm not nearly as consistent as I should be. And I want to come back to that comment, but you've mentioned it a couple times now, so I'm going to double back a little bit and just, can you tell me a little more about the writing project you're talking about, the Central Texas Writing Project?
Sure. So, the National Writing Project is a national program that basically is, the premise is that teachers of writing, we are better teachers of writing when we are writers ourselves. And so it's a very organic kind of professional development process. You go in, we have a summer institute, and we're based out of San Marcos at Texas State University. And we meet 4 weeks in June, and for all of June from 8:30 to 3:30 every day. And it's writing professional development. And so it's not writing, though, that we do to people. It's the teachers themselves are the learners. So I co-direct the project. I work with Dr. Liz Stevens. She's actually on staff at Texas State. And then we kind of model different writing processes, different structures. And then we present different books of, you know, best practice and writing and things like that. And then each teacher comes in with a burning question, and we help them find, you know, like, what's the best way to confer with fourth graders, or how can I use, what practices can I use with my dual language learners to best teach them writing? And, you know, all different, and it's kindergarten teachers through college professors that are actually members of the Writing Project. And so then they each have this burning topic, and then they work to find out the answers. And so they do eye searches. We connect them with local authors. We learn from each other. Each teacher presents a lesson that they do with their class. And then we look for ways that we can connect that writing process or strategy or structure with the kids that we work with or the current role that we have. And so it's a very, very just open, or, you know, there's no one right way. It's, oh, okay, well, would that work here? Or let's try this. And we spend basically 6 hours a day writing, researching, visiting, talking, sharing food. And it's just, there are writing project sites all over the United States. So look one up close to you, because they are fantastic. And then at the end of the 4 weeks, the teachers become teacher consultants for the writing project. And so then schools can contract with the writing project and have professional development with the teacher consultants.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely have to get connected with that. That is totally up my alley. You know, I actually am a writer as well, although not nearly as much as I used to be. But I've written a young adult novel, and I'm heavily involved with, I don't know if you know NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month.
I've heard of it, but I'm not as familiar with it.
Yeah, so I'm the municipal liaison, the chair for the Central Florida region. So we have about 2,000 writers every November that try to write a 50,000-word novel in 30 days. So.
Oh. Yeah, that sounds awful.
Yeah, it's intense. It is definitely intense. So when you mentioned sitting there for 20 minutes and at the worst 20 minutes of your life, like, yeah, I can relate to that a lot. And I think you're right. I think I actually started it because of my kids. I started doing NaNoWriMo. Someone mentioned it to me and they were like, hey, there's this thing you can do. And I was like, that sounds awful, but it might be cool to get my kids to do it, but I'm probably not going to get my kids to do it unless I do it with them. So, all right, I'll give it a shot. And none of my kids made it that first year, but I hit the 50,000 that first year and wrote my first book. So it was awesome. Like such an essential accomplishment. And ever since, it just, it's, I guess in a lot of ways that has really driven me on through teaching my students how to write a lot too. So
Well, National Writing Project, their site, will give you a lot of good places to head, good information.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to look into that one, and I hope my audience does as well. So, cool. We're cruising right along, but I've got one more question for you that I have planned, and we'll see where we end up from there.
Okay.
And this is definitely my favorite question of the day. So my last question for my guests is, who is the best teacher you ever had?
Okay. So my speech teacher in high school, her name's Rhonda Alves. She was my best teacher ever of all the things. Speech teacher. She also taught me in a class called radio TV because I had to have an extra elective. And so I took a radio TV class and I got to do the announcements in high school, like the video announcements with this large, gigantic video cassette recorder that this guy had on his shoulder. But yeah, her name's Rhonda Alves and she was fantastic. Fantastic.
What is it that made her so fantastic?
So I think it's because she was real. She was very real. Of course, I think I had her as a sophomore, junior, senior. She was real and she was hysterical and funny. And we knew who she was. We knew what she cared about. As a speech teacher, I did debate with her. I did humorous interpretation. I did oratory, extemporaneous speaking, all these different kinds. And so I think in a way she was a literacy teacher to me. So we connected over books. You know, I remember performing From the Prince of Tides. And because it's such a it's pretty intense. I remember she talked to my parents about it before to get their permission. And, you know, I remember she would recommend authors to me and I would read them. And at that time I'd been a reader in elementary school and junior high, but, you know, when you're in high school and cheerleading and whatever, it's like, it wasn't that big of a thing. And when I got with her, I just, whatever she recommended, I wanted to do. I don't know. I just remember everything she did. She encouraged me as an author, like as a writer. I think she listened to what I had to say. I remember when I graduated, she had me come back and help and do some professional development with some other people. And so I felt like she was invested in me, I think. And, she was so good at what she did that it made me want to emulate it. And so it wasn't anything specific. I mean, I can't remember a time when she was like, tell me your feelings or, you know, but I always knew that I could talk to her if I needed to. So I guess relationship, her rapport with us was fantastic. And then also getting to see her in a different, you know, so when you're with in the debate class and then when you're in the radio TV class, it was a different group of people in each, you know, but how she cared about everybody that same way. You know, it was, I remember she had this gigantic poster on her wall, huge, like a sign of vinyl, some sort of huge thing of, a Martin Luther King speech. And I remember us having conversations about diversity and about, activism and things that seemed so outside of the norm of what our other teachers were talking about in our little tiny town. And I don't know, I was fascinated by her. I was just fascinated by her. So I think that's probably my favorite teacher or the one that meant the most to me.
It's interesting to me always with this podcast, and those are always my three questions. And it is so interesting to me how there are connections through the answers to all three questions. And I don't think my guests mean to do it per se, but what you said was you talked about how noise is this constant problem for teachers and they need to learn to listen through it and get past that noise. You talked about blogging as a reflective process, which arguably that's one of the ways to sort through the noise and figure out the parts that are your voice. Yeah. And then you go into your favorite teacher who is someone who you directly said, we knew who she was and what she cared about. Like,
yeah.
And that's exactly what it is to have your inner voice understood, right? So to understand your own inner voice is knowing what you are and what you care about. So I always find it fascinating how those threads weave themselves through all those answers.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of like, I have goosebumps like with you finding the thread, because really what it does for me is continues to cement the fact that the things that I value throughout the process drive what I believe about learners, and whether they're children or teachers or adults or principals or whomever they are, I just am so fascinated with the whole process of everybody having their own passion. And I think that communication and that thing is definitely a passion of mine. So, I don't know. That's neat. It's a neat way to connect it all together.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I did want to talk about one more thing because we talked about it in the pre-record, and we talked about, you did mention you have a son and a daughter.
I
have asked on other episodes with people that have kids how they balance the teacher and parent relationships with when they are a teacher. You know, my son starts kindergarten in a month. And I am terrified about being like, if he gets a teacher I don't know what I'm going to do. Like I guess just makes me so afraid. Like I'm going to want to be in there every day going, that's not how you teach. That's not how you teach. And I don't want to do that. So how do you balance those two things?
I don't balance them at all. I'm terrible at it. I think the way that I try to handle it is just the idea of grace, that I want grace extended to me. I want grace extended to my children. And so I try to extend grace to everybody that we come in contact with. I will say that it is really difficult because as I'm in education, I have ideas and theories and, you know, things that I think should happen. What I've also discovered, though, being a coach is that the coolest thing about being a coach is that you're in so many classrooms. I get to be in classrooms all day long. And so I have learned so much from other people in my building that I never even, because teachers don't get to see other teachers. You know, we don't get to see and really be in each other's rooms. And so just because I don't do something doesn't mean that it's not good or right or that it doesn't work or that it's, you know. And so with, I think balancing, and it has been difficult because my kids have been in the building where I've actually worked. And so there are times when I feel like we never have separation, you know, that I'm with my kids all the time. I'm with them before school. I'm with them after school. I'm with them, you know. And sometimes it's like, no, I don't want to go to science night. I just want to go home. I don't want to be a mom right now. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be a teacher right now. Or I don't, you know. And so I think that I just try to find, like, I love getting to see my daughter during the day or, you know, walk past her or see it. I remember when my son was in first grade, when I was teaching first grade, that was the hardest year for me because he was with me all the time. Like, not with me, but I'd stick my head out to get something out of the hallway and his teacher would be talking to him in the hall. And I would be like, oh, great. You know, because I'd get panicked about, like, is he being naughty? Do I need to go down there? What? And I remember Wendy, his teacher, she was so funny. She would just push her arm. I like, get back in your room. This is not your business. And talking to her one day and she said, here's the thing. If you did not work here, you would not have seen me talking to him. And she said, you do not need to know about this. This is not your business. And I'm like, it is my business. That's my kid. And she's like, but this was something I just needed to ask him a question. We were out in the hallway. I asked him because I didn't want to do it in front of the whole class. He's not doing anything wrong. You need to settle down, you know. But teachers, we have high expectations for our own kids, you know, and so that's difficult. We have, it's tough. And I don't know that there's a right thing. I just try to, you know, laugh at a lot. And I think probably the biggest thing that I've learned is that you have to balance. I want my kids to fight their own battles, but I also have to know when to advocate for them. You know, that a lot of times things that are problems are really just miscommunications or misunderstandings. And so there have been a couple of times that I've had, that I've requested a meeting, or that I've went and sat down and talked with a teacher or sent an email or, you know, whatever. And I think people that are parents understand that need, and that sometimes you just have to ask, or you just have to do it. But as much as possible, I try to have my kids be the ones to, you know, fight that themselves. But you do have to advocate, and it's a balance. I don't really know what the line is. But I always try to have my kids do their own thing before I, you know, like me stepping in or sending something or asking is usually a last resort, you know, because I don't want to be the, I don't want to be the one to go in and just fight everything for them. I want them to have to understand and experience different personality types and different this. And even if it's not a teacher that's their favorite, it's a great learning opportunity for personalities and for how to manage yourself and how to do your own thing. And so, you know, that's been interesting to kind of watch them, that you can still grow and learn a lot in a situation where you typically, you know, it starts out as they don't like it, or they start, you know, but through discussion and talking, we can realize that difficulty has helped them learn in a new way or learn something more about themselves. And that's helpful too. So I have no advice. I can help you in no.
Well, I think there was some advice buried in there. I got a couple of kernels there. And yet I'm equally, and if not more, terrified than I was before. But I
did. You're welcome.
So thanks for that part.
So I do have a blog post on everything I ever learned, I learned from kindergarten lunch duty. So You'll have to check that one out, because my first year as a coach, I helped out during lunch the first week of school with kindergarten, and I was beside myself. And so it's completely hysterical that it's just its own thing. So as the dad of a kindergartner, it will really help you to know what you're sending your child into at lunch.
All right. I will definitely have to check that out. All right, I have one last thing that we talked about that I want to get to before we close this thing out. And you and I talked beforehand a little bit about professional development and wanting to change those. And listeners of my show will know that I'm obsessed with changing professional development. So can you just talk a little bit about sort of your vision for what that should look like, or what you try to do, and where you're coming from on that?
Yeah, so as a classroom teacher, I sat in a lot of PD sessions. I remember one time I was in a literacy training or something, and this sweet darling new teacher raised her hand and was like, "Wait, so you mean we can like read a book and ask the kids questions about it?" And I remember going, wait a minute, like, how am I in the same session as this person? And she was precious, and I'm so glad that she got her question answered. And I'm not trying to like make fun of the question, because it shows but it points us to the varying levels of expertise at different points. And so the one size fits all professional development model, I think, has got to be revamped. And there are so many opportunities that teachers have for professional growth, but not a lot that we're in charge of. And so that's one of the reasons that I enjoy EdCamp so much, that I enjoy Twitter so much, is I can follow the people that are going to help me, and I don't follow the people that aren't. If I'm looking at something, I can say, okay, wait, I need this. So when I do professional development now, I look for as many ways, like I'm presenting at a Chromebook Academy next week, and I'm already looking at ways, like I've gotten the bare bones of the presentation, and now I'm like, okay, what can I do in Nearpod so that people that are past this can skip past and start working on their own thing? And really looking at how we can differentiate that for adult learners. So there's a book called Personalized PD by Jason Bretzman and Kenny Bosch. And I just happened to find them on a Twitter chat one night. And now I, every Tuesday night at 8 Central, we do a personalized PD Twitter chat. And it's basically the idea of advocating for your own professional growth, and that we've, you know, had PD done to us for so long that we have to find ways to make those situations better. As a coach, I'm involved in a lot of professional development, you know, of doing the PD to people. And so I look for ways that we can deliver the content in a lot of different ways so that everybody can kind of get it the way that they need it. The personalized PD hashtag on Twitter will also connect you to people that have those that kind of same mindset. And so that's really just it to me. I know that I've kind of, because there's two things. There's making the decision as a presenter that I'm going to look for ways to do that, or as a campus leader. But then there's also kind of this grassroots way of looking at it that teachers have to advocate for it. And so sometimes it's breakout sessions. Sometimes it's a flipped model where you know, watch the video first and then you come in and really maximize your face-to-face time. Sometimes it's, we don't really need to meet about this at all. Sometimes it's, this meeting could have been an email, you know, it. And I think that a lot of times we take meetings and we use them for PD, but that may or may not be the right way or the right time. So the personalized PD movement with, or movement, I may be strong, but one of the things they did is actually have started patio PD. I mean, I think you mentioned fireside or something like that earlier. So it's basically just that idea of just getting a bunch of teachers together. And because teachers have PD on their own every day when they're eating lunch together, they're talking about their practice, they're talking about their kids, they're talking about what worked and what didn't. And so I think just kind of moving from that compliance to the what we're passionate about learning and helping teachers pursue those, you know, in groups, as partners, individually. And then valuing the time that they spend outside of their classrooms, getting that, you know, and honoring those attempts at learning are, I think that's really important because we've got the information, you know, we just have to seek it out.
Yeah. And I think another part of that that's becoming critical for me and I'm focusing on is getting our teachers credit for doing those opportunities. Yeah. You mentioned Patio PD, Coffee EDU is another one that's getting pretty big right now. Ed camps are a great example, like you mentioned already, but there's so many of these styles and formats out there right now that, you know, I would love to find a way to get real credit in our teachers. And I don't know. I don't know that PD points are necessarily the way to do it, just simply because I don't know about your district, but we get so many PD points anyways that we don't need them to recertify. Like, they don't really have, even though we need them, they don't, they're so available. It's like an economy of no need, you know, there's,
right.
So I don't know that that's necessarily the end all to be all, but there needs to be something that these teachers really, to be great teachers, I feel like, to really go above and beyond and change education in the ways it needs to change, we need to be connected and going out of our way. But I don't think that we're getting the credit for that right now. And so if we get credit and we make it worth their while somehow, maybe we can really start to push those changes in the way we all want to.
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is to that, because I'm really more of a, I haven't thought it through in that way. I know that some of the people that are part of the personalized PD group that I talked to have come up with different ways and doing things with, you know, badging or with grad credit. Dr. Randall Sampson is one that has done, I think it's like capture, curate, and share. And so it's the whole idea of capturing these informal PD things that you do, whether it be on Twitter or Voxer or on Pinterest, and making connections and things like that. And then you upload them and then that turns into grad credit. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways and, you know, with badging and all the, there are things, but I'm less, because my district doesn't necessarily require some of those things, I'm not as big into looking for ways to make that work. But I think that there is, I think that's where we are. We're in this thing right now where the more people advocate for it, the more common it's going to become. But I think we're just kind of in the beginning phases of that.
Cool. Well, Mandy, this has been a truly awesome conversation. We're coming up right on, we're coming right up onto an hour here. So this has really been a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit with me and talk about some of this stuff. It was awesome. And I know I've definitely followed you on Twitter and will be checking out your blog all the time now. Can you just, for my audience, tell them how to get a hold of you, how to reach out to you?
Yeah. So on Twitter, I'm Mandy M. Taylor. And just exactly how it sounds, it's Mandy with a Y. A lot of people ask, why or an I? And I'm like, oh, no, I am not that perky to be Mandy with an I. And then I blog at tailormadeteaching.com. And that's about it. That's where I am. That's where I hang out.
Cool. Well, Mandy, thank you again for sitting with me, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks so much for reaching out.
Thank you. All right, have a good one.
Bye.
What a fun time that was. Thank you, Mandy, for talking with me. And for all of you, please take the time to go check her out. Her blog is really awesome. And thank you all again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard, reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Streffler. Or leave a comment on my website, bradstreffler.com. As always, thank you to Kevin McLeod for our opening and closing music, Vicious. Check him out at incompetech.com. Until next week, remember that whatever you are an educator.